Alice Slater, welcome to KABU.
Thanks, Bill. Great to be here.
Alice Slater is a board member of the organization World Beyond War and also the Global Network Against Weapons and Nuclear Power in Space. She also represents the Nuclear Age Peace Foundation at the United Nations. She began her long quest for peace on Earth when, as a suburban homemaker raising children, she organized Eugene McCarthy's presidential challenge in her community to Johnson's illegal war in Vietnam. She also serves on the People's Climate Committee in New York City, working for 100% green energy by 2030. Today we'll be discussing Russia's attack on Ukraine, understanding as a product of, for one, NATO's policy led by the U.S. to expand NATO and place missiles in Ukraine on Russia's western border, and second, Russia's fear, of course, of being encircled and attacked. We also discuss how the war might be resolved and stopped, which would require defeating U.S. elites committed to the maintenance of U.S. political, economic, and space supremacy. In addition, we focus on Ukraine's success against a very superior Russian army, partly through unconventional guerrilla tactics, and also nonviolent resistance and popular disobedience. The young Chinese guy who stood in front of the tank, forced it to go around him, that inspired many acts of nonviolent resistance in Ukraine. So, Alice Slater, the establishment press began reporting, even before the invasion, discussing how George Kennan, who developed the containment strategy for Russia after World War II, as well as several former hardline secretaries of state, including Henry Kissinger or George Shultz, they all said it would be a great mistake for NATO to expand into Ukraine, that the nuclear-armed Russians would never permit it. But for the last 10 days or so, the establishment press has been calling it Putin's war. How do you understand the long history of this Ukraine war? And to whom or what do you assign responsibility?
Well, I think we have to remember what General Eisenhower, who became president, told us in his farewell address. He warned America about the military-industrial complex and its undue influence on public affairs. And we are seeing this now on steroids. As a matter of fact, Ray McGovern, who's a former CIA director that was briefing Bush and Clinton every morning, he was a top CIA guy, he quit in disgust and formed VIPs, Veterans Intelligence Professionals for Sanity. And he said, it's not the military-industrial complex anymore. I said, what is it, Ray? He said, it's the Mickey Mat. What's the Mickey Mat? The military, industrial, congressional, intelligence, media, academic, think tank complex. They're all in bed with each other, and they're making huge sums of money on war. There have been articles about how Boeing, Lockheed, and Raytheon are so thrilled about all the arms sales they're making with the Ukraine war. It's been in the papers. They're unashamed to even say how pleased they are. And Biden's Secretary of War, you know, we call it defense, is from the board of Raytheon. So I think we have to really start looking at it and how they control the media, because it's awful to even read the press today. They keep telling you how insane and horrible Putin is. And of course, it's terrible what Putin is doing there. But they keep saying how he provoked the war in Ukraine without any of the history. And you just quoted some of the top government advisors from the establishment who said NATO expansion would be a mistake. Gorbachev and Reagan, when the wall fell, Gorbachev let all of Eastern Europe go without a shot. It was like a miracle. He dissolved the Warsaw Pact. And he and Reagan met in Reykjavik. And he said to Reagan, let's get rid of all our nuclear weapons. Reagan said, great idea, but Gorbachev said, don't do Star Wars. And Reagan says, I can't give up Star Wars. And that was like, we had our documents to dominate and control the military use of space. And actually, Trump actually set up the Space Department separate from the Air Force. I mean, that's their mission, to dominate and control the military use of space. So, of course, Russia and China are not going to give up their nukes if we're going to dominate space. That's part of it. But the other thing, Gorbachev was so concerned about a united Germany when the wall fell, being part of NATO, because I didn't know this, but Russia lost 27 million people to the Nazi onslaught. I mean, that's a number we never know about. The U.S. lost 3,000 people in the World Trade Center for the first time, and we went bananas. We started a whole global war on terror from that. So anyway, Reagan said to Gorbachev, don't worry, I give you my word, let Germany be reunited, let them come into our NATO alliance, and we will not expand NATO. And now they have taken so many countries into NATO right up to Russia's border. I think it's like another 14 countries, all of Eastern Europe into NATO. Plus, we had a treaty, the anti-ballistic missile treaty with the Soviet Union, that we said we weren't going to put anti-ballistic missiles in only two bases, one in Moscow and one in North Dakota, and we wouldn't build them any other place. This was in 72 with the Soviet Union, and that allowed us to stop the missile race because we weren't doing anti-missiles. So Bush walked out of the anti-ballistic missile treaty and put missiles in Romania, and then Trump put them in Poland. So we're creeping up closer and closer, and Putin made this incredible speech about 2 weeks before the war started saying, this is my red line, you cannot invite Ukraine into NATO. And we said, you can't tell us what to do. I mean, this is crazy. There was another thing that we did that we shouldn't have done. When we bombed Kosovo, we had a treaty with the UN that we would never bomb another country without the Security Council approval unless we were under imminent threat of attack. Well, Russia vetoed the UN going to war in Kosovo because they were supporting the other side, Serbia. And Clinton said, the hell with you, and just got together a NATO troop. Like, we don't even obey any laws. We just have our own rules-based order, which is whoever has the power makes the rules. You know, we have all this international law that we're disregarding. So this is what Putin had his red line. Don't invite Ukraine into NATO. And we said, you can't tell us what to do. And then we got this nutjob president in Ukraine that wants arms. He wants us to fly. He wants us to attack. And we're humoring him. And I've never seen such media coverage of a war. I mean, did you see these kinds of pictures night and day in Afghanistan, in Iraq, in Libya, now in Yemen? We're killing people every day in Yemen. You're seeing this on the news? You're seeing mothers crying and holding babies? No, only in Ukraine. And, you know, I don't understand that, except, you know, like we're finding out everybody's welcoming all these Ukrainian immigrants, thank God, they're getting out of the way of the war. But if they're black or brown, they're not welcome. I mean, there's something really awful about this. We helped overthrow a legally elected government in Ukraine in 2014. This Victoria Nuland in our State Department, who Biden has there as his number four woman, said, well, Yats is the guys. They were figuring out. They were sending in money and troops, and they were going to help overthrow this legally elected president because he decided to go with Russia's economic market instead of the EU. They were giving him a better deal. And we overthrew him. And the guy that came in said, from now on, we're only going to speak Ukrainian. And the whole eastern third of Ukraine is settled by Russians. I mean, it was part of Russia forever. So those people rose up, and Russia came in to help them, and they had a referendum, and something like 80% or more voted to go with Russia. So they left, and then there were these disputed areas, the Donbas and Lushenko. I'm not sure if I'm saying that right, but anyway, Ukraine killed 14,000 people in there since 2014, and there were Minsk agreements. They were supposed to negotiate and make it a federation or whatever. Anyway, the smart thing that the whole world should be calling for is for Ukraine to be neutral, like Austria was and Finland. That's how they avoided being destroyed during the war. And if that's what Putin was asking for, that they be neutral, they not be aligned with our military alliance against Russia. And it's inexplicable to me that you can't even get this in the news today. And, I mean, I talk to people about this, and they think, you know, you've got to hate Putin. That's it. Hate Putin. I mean, come on. Why didn't they hate Bush or Obama or that was bombing the crap out of other countries. I mean, we were killing babies and destroying hospitals, and we were doing it for years in Afghanistan. And why aren't they yelling at us now? We're keeping Afghanistan's money, and the people are starving, like the few hundred billion they had in the bank after this whole disaster that we were holding. We're supposed to turn it over. We don't want to give it to the Taliban. Well, what do you think the Taliban's going to do with it? They're going to feed people. They're going to build houses. You know, they're the government now. Anyway, it's ugly.
Yeah.
Do you know the new movie, Don't Look Up? Did anybody see it where the media is full of crap and they're not listening? It's about the climate and the president is in bed with the military and the president escapes with the military to another planet and everybody dies on Earth. I mean, that's what it is now. Don't look up. And we keep telling how Putin's censoring the press in Russia, but do you know, like in America now, we can't read Russia Today, which is like the BBC. It's their Russian. You know, I'd like to hear what Russia's saying. We're not allowed. We've been cut off, too, in America, you know, the land of the free and the home of the brave and First Amendment and free speech. You know, look what they did to Julian Assange, free speech, for revealing government secrets of misdoing.
This is KB Radio, 90.7 FM, Portland, Oregon. Bill Resnick here for the Old Mole Variety Hour. The variety is in the struggles from below that we cover. I'm talking to Alice Slater of World Beyond War, active in many other struggles. We just discussed how the U.S. State Department and people like even Henry Kissinger and George Shultz and George Kennan, all of them recognized that it was a terrible mistake to take over all of Eastern Europe and the Ukraine and threaten Russia, that Russia would fight back. Russia's as bad as this is not a brief or a case for the Russians and the Russian system. But there's a huge fear in Russia over armed Germany and the rest of the NATO allies repeating what happened in World War II, which is a vast killing of Russians. So, Alice, in addition to your, you named the forces most committed to U.S. supremacy, with the U.S. as the deciders, not just on the planet, but also in space. The U.S. is now pushing the Chinese and the Russians to challenge them in space, another hot spot in the world that's going to become even hotter if we ever get to that point.
This is so unnecessary. This is so unnecessary. China and Russia have tabled a draft treaty in 2008 and again in 2014 to ban weapons in space. And the U.S. blocks it. And the Commission on Disarmament, you need consensus to discuss the treaty and amend it and, you know, make it better. We won't even let anybody talk about it. And every year there's a resolution in the United Nations Disarmament Committee, Prevention of an Arms Race in Outer Space, and the U.S. votes against it. And China and Russia support it and put it in. I mean, you can't imagine how bad we are. And the other thing that we're doing, when the U.S. and Israel boasted about having hacked Iran's uranium enrichment plant with the Stuxnet virus, there was a lot of news, hey, we got this new Stuxnet virus. Putin called Obama, this was a story in the New York Times, I'm surprised they reported it, and said, hey, why don't we negotiate a cyber war ban treaty? And Obama said no. And that's another resolution they've been putting into UN recently, China and Russia, to negotiate a treaty to stop cyber war. How could we allow ourselves to be so vulnerable? How could we be so stupid? It's like these patriarchal, corporate, macho guys. I mean, they're just not seeing straight. We're shooting ourselves in the foot if we don't negotiate for peace in space and cyber war, you know. And it's money that's driving it. It's big money. That's what's driving it.
I think so. Alice, let me do a different hypothesis. I agree, of course, there's a national security establishment, there's the CIA, there's the military-industrial complex, there are all the weapons firms are now making things. Yes, but there's the big, also the corporations and the big banks, especially the finance world. They are kept in power over the economy of the entire planet because they run the banking system. And U.S. power, in fact, it's only because U.S. power is so great and the U.S. is supreme that the U.S. can continue to run that whole banking system, which extracts tremendous amounts of money from the other countries of the world. Not the Europeans, of course, but the entire global South is
I mean, China's coming up. We have a new competitor, and they're going to gang up with Russia. They gave a terrific speech, a joint statement at the Olympics, China and Russia. I'm telling everybody to read it. They're begging for the treaties, for peace and space, cyber war, robotics, you know, stop going into the, and they're talking about a peace, a new, more peaceful world, and we're not. We're just, we are drunk on power, like, we're like the Wild West. The Cold War ended, and instead, at one point, Russia was asking to join NATO when we kept expanding it, and we said no. You know, we needed an enemy. Gorbachev said, let us come into NATO, and we said no, because they didn't want to be on the outside. They had changed their whole system. They went in, and boy, did we fix them. We practically elected Yeltsin, who was this drunken darling of the patriarchs and the corporate plutocrats, and they raped Russia economically so that their life expectancy went down to something like 56 compared to being in the 70s. Then Putin came in and put them on, you know, on the up and up, straightened them out. He's popular there, you know. I mean, what he's doing now is terrible, but he got them into a better condition after how, you know, after World War II, we came in with a Marshall Plan for Italy and for Germany and for Japan, and we fixed them all up. And we didn't do anything for Russia when the war fell. We just, we pillaged their corporations and their resources, their minerals, and we sent in our plutocrats, and we supported the worst kind of plutocracy developing there, and it was like ugly. So we're reaping the whirlwind, and I don't think we're going to win economically. I mean, first of all, the United States has 800 military bases in 80 countries around the world. This is what we did after World War II, instead of bringing the troops home. I mean, Russia has like 3 and China has 1 or 2. I mean, with nothing, you know, compared to us. Russia's right around its country. It's not in Asia or, you know, where we are, all over the world. And we also keep nuclear weapons in 5 NATO countries. We keep nuclear weapons in Germany, Italy, Turkey, Netherlands, and Belgium. I mean, that's another thing that Putin asked. Get your nuclear weapons out of Europe. How dare we, you know? It's insane.
Alice, the U.S. has gotten into war. The Ukraine deserves to be a country. Russia, for all the historical reasons, it's necessary that Ukraine remain neutral, along with the Czechoslovaks decided not to have military bases in their country as well.
Right.
Finland is neutral. They don't want the Russian bear to become more belligerent.
Right.
The Ukraine, seems to me that, the Ukraine, not the Ukraine, it's Ukraine, it's a country. They have done extremely well at checking the much more powerful, at least powerful weapons, Russian army. In fact, and a larger army through guerrilla tactics, unconventional warfare, like in Afghanistan. Anyway, they drove the Russians and U.S. They defeated both the U.S. and Russia. Your website, number of websites, had the story of Ukrainian resistance. Another story, though, not their armed resistance, the unconventional warfare, but about popular nonviolent resistance, popular disobedience in the Ukraine. That story deserves to be told.
But, you know, we have it in America, too. It doesn't get told, you know. So we have these plowshare people that go put blood on the missiles and get arrested for breaking into nuclear weapons sites. You know, they're not fighting anybody. They're being peaceful, and they go to jail for years. Like the Berrigan brothers, you know, or my friend Megan Rice, she was a nun that went into Oak Ridge, you know. They just had a trial. They put her in jail for 3 years for breaking into the Oak Ridge uranium enrichment plant and throwing blood on the factory, you know. So, anyway, I mean, it's wonderful that we have that, and we should promote it, but the Ukrainian nonviolent people should be talking like this colleague of mine, Yuri Shelyazhenko. He's the head of the Ukrainian Pacifist Society, and he's a professor at a university in Kiev, and he's on the board of World Beyond War. And he talks about that Ukraine should be neutral. They shouldn't join NATO. You know, they should have nonviolent resistance. There's a lot of people trying to push through, and anything we can do to amplify their message, definitely good. I'd look at worldbeyondwar.org, Ukraine, and look for Yuri Shelyazhenko, Shelyazhenko. I mean, he's amazing, but he's been speaking all over, doing webinars everywhere. And the uprising in Ukraine against Russia should be also uprising against this nutjob who's their president, who wants more arms, more American planes, which just means more people are going to be killed. I mean, they're not going to defeat Russia, so they should make a deal. There's nothing wrong with acquiescing to Putin's original red line before he invaded, that they promised not to join NATO and they stay neutral. And then in the Donbass and Luzhanko, those two places that were mixed, that didn't resign, there's a Minsk agreement that Ukraine has been ignoring. And the U.S. keeps selling arms to Ukraine. We should not be selling arms to Ukraine so they can shoot at Russians. We should stop all the bullets. I mean, if Ukraine didn't have arms, they'd have to take the deal, right? And the war would be over and everybody would be fine. It would be neutral. They wouldn't be in NATO. What's the loss? That they're not in NATO? NATO should be disbanded. NATO was a Cold War alliance that should have been disbanded when Gorbachev disbanded the Warsaw Pact. It was kept going because it sells bullets and armaments and missiles and drones and all these terrible things. That's the only industry we have that's good in America. Everything else we got to import.
Yeah.
There was one other thing that we didn't talk about. In 2017, 122 nations succeeded in getting a vote in the UN for a treaty to ban nuclear weapons, the Treaty for the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons. We've banned chemical weapons and biological. We never banned nuclear. And none of the nuclear weapon states joined. But we have cities' resolutions. We have parliamentary pledges. Like, I got my member of Congress to sign this pledge. She's going to call on Biden to do the treaty. And that's something else that we can ask after the ceasefire and that Ukraine is neutral, that they volunteer to join the treaty and ask other countries, you know, and push Russia to do it. And then we have to get rid of the bomb. It's like ridiculous, you know. And the world, we have to all work together to stop the plagues and the climate catastrophe that's zooming down on us. I mean, what a distraction this is from the real work we have to do cooperatively on the planet. It's like, it's insane that we're not doing that.
I know you're a very active climate action person. My sense is that the climate action movements, for one reason, so much wealth of the world is going into armaments and so little is going into creating a clean and green economy based on electricity. I think that the climate action movements are ready to, in fact, take on the military-industrial complex. I hope so. That seems to me the best chance in the United States to begin really transforming this country into one that uses its wealth to make sure the planet is still inhabitable.
It's a no-brainer. It's just that you can't get it said in the media because it's owned by the military people and the oil people that are making money and don't want it to happen. Look at what they're talking about now, how much money gas is. What they should be talking about now is cutting the military budget in half and giving everybody an electric car so we don't have to raise the gas price because they won't be used. They're trying to figure out how they're going to drill for more oil right now. I mean, this is like lunacy when we know that we got 30 years before the climate goes down the tubes, you know. I mean, it's lunacy. And I think like this Extinction Rebellion, they're going to have a huge thing in the spring. And we in the peace movement have been talking to them for years to include the military, like Sierra Club just started. You know, they're just starting to get it. So let's hope. We should. We should make alliances with all the climate protectors and say, let's go where the money is. And I mean, we should just call for a moratorium on all military spending for the next 10 years. And every dollar should go into windmills and solar panels and geothermal and efficiency. like we did when we geared up for World War II. We stopped making cars and materials, and we only made tanks and guns. Well, right now, that's all we should be making is windmills and solar panels and, you know, clean grids or whatever they need. We have all the solutions. We know what to do. There's no secret. We can fix it. We just have the wrong intentions right now.
And we can end the kind of wars that we've been experiencing all over the world. Alice Slater, thanks so much for talking to us today.
Thanks a lot, Bill.
Right. So long.